All right, 7:36 here on Hot Talk 99.5. And without further ado, let's get right into it with Representative Russell Fry of the 7th Congressional District. Good morning, Congressman. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Good to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
You able to make it in and out of the Myrtle Beach International Airport with proper security detail, you know, as you get to your flight to and from D.C. these days?
I don't know. Maybe I missed the memo, but I go through TSA like everybody else.
Right.
So I don't have a special entrance, you know. I don't usually wear a suit in the airport either. I'm usually in blacks or blue jeans and a polo. So you kind of take me. I try to fly casual. It's just easier that way. It's more comfortable, and I don't try to make a big scene.
That's what we call an icebreaker, Representative Fry. Loosen the guard a little bit, and now I'm going to strike. I'm going to go for the kill shot right now. Okay, no. Over the weekend, by the way, I was watching some SEC football, and I know that you have proposed what is known as the SCORE Act as it relates to college athletics and name, image, likeness, the ability for athletes to get paid, the athlete rights. And while this might be not necessarily the most pressing issue, it's the most pressing issue to me because while I was watching during the commercial break, the SEC has actually spent some advertising dollars during primetime television to promote the policy that you have proposed up in Washington, D.C. I'm just wondering if you have enough leverage to contact the SEC, since we are sort of an SEC country, home of the South Carolina Gamecocks, if you can get the SEC to spend some advertising dollars with us on the Hot Talk Morning Show so I can get a raise here in the near future.
Yeah, I'll get right on it. Know them well. Tell them to come over to WRNN and, promote.
Just spend a couple of dollars with us, you know, and we'll promote it for them. I mean, it's a proposal that you sponsored.
It's like you said, it's not the most pressing issue, but for, you know, a quarter of a million Americans that are student-athletes, it is a big issue, right? The legal uncertainty that is in college sports right now is untenable. If you and it's unfortunate too, right? If people who pay attention to the game and to the sports, the transfer portal's a mess.
Yeah.
Anytime that a school or a conference wants to come in and say, "Hey, you got to have certain amount, you got to have these grades and benchmarks to be a student athlete," or "You got to have these," this is the understanding. There's always a lawsuit. I mean, there's a guy in I think Tennessee somewhere who is suing because he wants an 8th year of eligibility in college basketball. And he's a good player, but we don't need to have the Van Wilders, if you remember that movie,
yeah,
of college sports kind of continuing on. So anytime that these things happen, schools get sued. And what happens for schools like Coastal is that it disproportionately affects them because these lawsuits hit the bottom line. It costs you money. It delays things. That's kind of the name of the game right now, is just sue and get a bunch of money, not just from the student athlete perspective, but to stop an action. And what that's going to do is for things like golf or equestrian or swimming or wrestling, some of these Olympic sports, women's sports, they're going to get the axe first. The college footballs are going to be fine. They're the revenue generators, but it's the other sports that will be disproportionately impacted. And so this bill is kind of a marriage of input from student athletes, from conferences, schools, and trying to fix some of these issues, not being heavy-handed, but having some framework in there that allows them to create rules and have oxygen to create that rule that people would follow. I think it's a good thing, and I'm glad to have the SECs and many other people's support on it.
Well, the Southeastern Conference can contact Matt Bowman, M. Bowman at dbcradio.com if they're interested in having their message heard on our airwaves as our market manager here at DBC Radio Myrtle Beach for future inquiries. We're talking with Congressman Russell Fry this morning of the 7th Congressional District. All right, amid this government shutdown, we've got municipal elections today. Obviously, here on the Grand Strand, some big races that no doubt can reshape the way our city council looks in Myrtle Beach, what it looks like up on the North Strand. When it comes to municipal races, of course, you held office at one time over in Columbia. How big are these sorts of days when it comes to the future and the direction that each of our locales will move? And, of course, the impact that has on our entire region as a whole.
Look, they're huge. I mean, local government controls far more, I think, that affects your daily life than even Washington, D.C. So it's important to I always think of voting as an obligation and a way to honor the people who sacrificed to preserve that right to vote. So get out there. If you live in one of these cities that has a race, get out there and vote. Make sure you're informed about the candidates. Turnout is going to be low, so your vote counts even more. I think it's important to get out there. And obviously, I think every municipality has some race, or most municipalities have some race that's going on right now. So get out there and vote. Make your voice heard. It's important.
All right, obviously, the government shutdown at now, 35 days? Will hit a record once the clock strikes midnight a little later on tonight. When it comes to the short term here, what do Republicans need to do to come out favorable when the government finally does reopen? How do you make the case, and do you feel like the GOP has done a good job as a whole in making the case as why you continue to stand your ground and continue to hold the political football, looking for that time of possession win on the gridiron?
First of all, and Joe, I mean, I think it's important to back up for a second and realize that this is the dumbest shutdown that I've ever seen. Right? I haven't been in Congress long, never experienced a shutdown really, but I've paid attention enough in the news to know this is the dumbest one we've ever done. I think the GOP has done a decent job, maybe not the best, but a decent job at making the case that we're not going to take the Democrats' proposal, which is we're going to have $1.5 trillion in additional government spending, that we're going to reopen the loopholes that we already closed that would allow illegal immigrants to get health care on the American taxpayer's dime, that we're going to do away with the work requirements that we put in the big, beautiful bill that people largely support. I think this is easy. And I think it's important to remember, too, whether your listeners, I think most of them probably tend to be on the right, but you've probably got some on the other side, too. You're starting to see reliably Democrat members of Congress, but also groups say, you know what, Chuck Schumer, this is ridiculous. Pass the clean continuing resolution. There's no gimmicks in this continuing resolution. There's no Republican policy riders. There's nothing in there that's like salacious or sexy. Pass the clean CR. So you have John Fetterman out there, who U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania. He's been one of the most vocal ones. But you've got House members saying the same thing. You've got unions saying the same thing. Government unions plus the AFL-CIO. You've got a whole host of things that are not usually on our side saying this is dumb. Pass a clean CR and get back to work. Don't fund illegal immigrant health care. Focus on the American priorities first. But here's the real impact. The people who work down at Myrtle Beach International, that are TSA agents, they are not being paid. They are missing a paycheck right now. They have mortgages like the rest of us. They have families to feed. You have 1.3 million service members and troops that are not being paid. There's a U.S. Marshal that I heard about the other day in Charleston, just south of us, who is Uber driving right now just to come up with money to pay his bills. This is crazy. And we're doing this to prop up illegal immigrant health care? I don't understand that at all. But that seems to be kind of the mindset of the Democrat Party right now, is that they're not focused on the American people. They're focused on everything but. And they're willing to throw it all away. For what? Illegal immigrant health care and removing work requirements that are supported by 80% of the American people? I don't think so. I mean, so for me, and I talked to the president actually last week, happy to tell you about it, but he said, you know, we're firm in this. And I said, yeah. I said, the people that I represent, when I'm out in the community at the Loris Bogoff, they tell me the same thing, almost to a T. Hold the line. And that's what we're doing.
Now, with that being said, members of Congress, including yourself, you continue to receive pay, though you have said that you would forego your pay during the shutdown. Why has that not become a big thing to showcase the fact that, hey, if our federal workers are hurting and missing their paychecks, we can miss ours too?
Well, and I am. I'm not receiving pay. I think several members, most Republicans, I think, have foregone their paycheck. To me, I think it's important that while we're in this, that you show solidarity, not only to, the troops and things like that, but my staff are also paid, right? And so they're not getting paid right now. So I said, this is, if we're in the shutdown, even though I didn't cause it, even though I'm not the one being recalcitrant, I'm going to be in solidarity with them. But here's the funny thing about that is Republicans are doing this. Find me like 5 to 10 Democrats that are withholding their pay. They're fine with shutting down the government as long as you continue to give them a paycheck. I think, that's why I'm supportive of measures that would say that when we're shut down, you don't get paid. You want to hold up the government? That's fine. You don't get paid for that. And I hope we come back and fix that. It might require a constitutional amendment, but I think there's some things that would be beneficial and that pull people to the table and not be, you know, complete ideologues like seems to be what's happening now.
Representative Russell Fry with us at the 7th Congressional District here this morning. We're talking about subsidized health care, and I want to touch on that towards the back end of our conversation here in just a few minutes. So in the short term, it kind of laid out the scenarios at play. In the long term, this time next year, in fact, 1 year to the date, voters will go to the polls and decide. The midterm election cycle doesn't necessarily traditionally work out for the party in power, meaning the minority party. Typically, is the party with the leverage and the trending in the upward direction, which could potentially stymie the final 2 years of the Trump administration. So in your eyes, what do Republicans need to do in the long term here, the long game, to retain the majority moving into next year in the midterms?
I think you got to highlight what you've done, right? I mean, the big, beautiful bills, the big, obvious choice, the product that was there, the tax cuts that were there, the regulatory reform, gas prices are cheaper. There is a lot in that package that you can highlight. And these are things that we ran on, right? Securing the border. We all ran on that. So it's no surprise that we actually did what we said we were going to do. I think it's important to highlight those successes. Because if you peel back and you have a memory of what happened during the Biden administration and where we were with inflation, the highest it's been in decades, where we were with the state of the American economy and interest rates and the border and all the lawlessness that were happening there, where we were with crime and what has happened to clean it up since then, I think that's an important distinction on where we are. And I think this president has delivered. I think the Congress, thankfully, has been unanimous, largely, in supporting the president's agenda. We haven't seen that. We didn't see that in the first Trump administration. Republicans were constantly battling with the president. This is a different beast. And you're right. The party in power tends to lose control in a midterm. But this is a year that I think that we could actually retain control. And the reason is, one, we've delivered, like I just talked about, on issues that the American people care about. But two, the other side is so out of bounds and so out of touch with reality that what choice do you have, right? Do you want troops to be paid or do you want illegal immigrants to get health care? Like that's kind of the distinction. While we're passing bills and doing things that we said we were going to do, that have a great impact to the American people, they're there trying to gum it up. And for what, right? We'll see what happens tonight. I mean, you've got three reliably blue jurisdictions, Virginia, New Jersey, and New York City. So my expectation is if you can keep it close, that's not bad. But these are not states that we typically win or are competitive in.
Sure.
To me, I don't think the talking heads will say, you know, if Republicans get one, that it's somehow a Republican affirmation. If Republicans lose all three, which I expect that they would just because of where they are. But if the Republicans lose all three, they're going to say like, oh, this is bad for the midterms. I don't think so. I'm looking at polling right now. There was some on CNN the other day. Like we're 7 points more favorable than we were in Trump's first term. I'm talking about generic Republican ballot. That's huge, right? I mean, this is you know, when these seats are 218 is the magic number to reach a majority, and we're polling on average 5 to 7 points higher than we were in 2018. That's massive, massive.
Yeah, when you look at the Democrat Party, they've badly weakened their more centrist base. Obviously, one way to take advantage of what may happen tonight on the Republican side is try and paint the picture. Hey, look at what's going on in New York and the election of avowed Democrat socialist. Do you want that for the rest of the nation? That'll be the campaign slogan and push, you know, all through next year. But when it comes to some policies, right, I mean, when you highlight the accomplishments, American people also want to know what you're going to do with the final 2 years of a Trump administration and potentially, you know, more Republican presidencies in the years to come. And that's when I come around to health care, right? Because a lot of this has to do, as you said, with health care, the subsidies that are going to expire at the end of the year, and the fact that this entire system is just just completely broken. So can Republicans get together and push forward a policy that says to the American people, hey, give us the power for the next 2 years, and we're going to pass something that will truly, you know, rework the American healthcare system to make sure, you know, insurance is not ridiculously expensive, as we've seen, while the quality of care continues to suffer. Can we, or can Republicans, you know, make that happen in the next year or so?
I mean, I think it's possible. I mean, I think healthcare isn't maybe like the highest topic on people's radar, but it certainly is on their radar, and it matters. What I think is important, too, is the distinction here is Democrats passed Obamacare with almost exclusively Democrat votes, saying that you could keep your doctor if you chose, you can't, saying your premiums would go down. They haven't. What it has done is it has put tremendous strain on the healthcare system. The premiums have gone up dramatically. If you look at like the chart, it's since the passage of Obamacare, those premiums have escalated onto the American people. And everybody said this when the Democrats passed this proposal during the Obama administration. But they did it anyway. Now we come to these COVID subsidies that were supposed to be temporary. And Democrats, again, use COVID as an excuse to expand Obamacare. And everybody said the same thing. If you do this, premiums are going to go up for the American people. And what happened? They did. And so we are digging ourselves into this hole that you just keep throwing subsidies and money at this problem. It's not going away, and it's not actually getting fixed. I think that there's a healthy lane to infuse a little bit of common sense. But I think it's also important to remember too, AOC and Bernie Sanders recently had a thing on the news, like a town hall almost, and they talked about this. This was all, in my mind, and they said it, this was all designed, Obamacare, to make the system fail. Their goal is single-payer health care, which is pure socialism. It's what European countries are doing, and it's not working out great for them either. So they want single-payer health care. Obamacare was the first step to that. I fundamentally disagree that that's where we need to be. I think the American people also disagree with that. So I think there's a healthy lane for this. And obviously with what's going on in Washington right now on these healthcare subsidies, I think it invites, I hope, a broader discussion on how to actually fix the problem.
Congressman Russell Fry, once again with us here this morning. Mr. Congressman, thanks so much for the time. And I know we'll catch up again real soon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Have a great week.
As Representative Russell Fry, 7th Congressional District, right here, we catch up with the Congressman every couple of weeks.